This is Audible.
The Lost and the Damned by Guy Haley. Read by Jonathan Keeble. Chapter 1. When strikes midnight. Bombardment. We will stand. Bab Bastion, 13th of Secundus. On the 13th day of Secundus, the bombardment of terror began. The enemy aimed the first shell deliberately at the centre of the inner palace, the Sanctum Imperialis, the Emperor's own quarters. It screamed a song of fire as it tore apart the atmosphere over Himalaya, falling through the furious storm of anti-ship cannonades and defence laser beams coming up from the Imperial defences. The assault on the War Master's fleet was so intense that the shell went almost unnoticed. Its flight was short, being cut apart by a net of las beams as soon as it was detected. But it was seen. The Emperor's Praetorian watched its brief descent, his stern features unmoved. Two others stood with him, mighty lords of the Imperium both. The great angel and the warhawk saw the momentary flash also. Three armoured giants, forged in the fires of yesterday's knowledge. They were brothers, after a fashion, born of the same science and the same inhuman genius. The Praetorian's name was Rogel Dorn. His armour was of gold. His hair was shocking white. His sculpted face was as severe as any patriarch from mankind's long history. There was no room for compromise in his expression. Sanguinius, the angel, was named. He was garbed in gold as bright as dawn's panoply. His armour covered all his body save his face and his snow-white wings. He was beautiful, a divine being incarnate, pulled down from heaven and exiled in the soiled world of men. He observed the universe sadly. The warhawk wore gleaming white. His adopted people called him Jagatai Khan, the first name given for his prowess, the latter because he was their king. He kept the name. Like his brothers, he went without his helm. Below a tall topknot, his face was proud, wild, always on the verge of a smile, but troubled, like the sky at summer's end, edged with autumn's clouds. He sought out death simply for the joy of laughing at it.
Midnight, as the old reckoning has it. The symbolic spear cast, said the Khan. Our brother makes his enmity for us. It is a challenge. A promise of his victory. We did this on Chogoris, when armies met. This shot is meant for the three of us.
Such arrogance, said Sanguinius softly.
Horus was well gifted with confidence. It has grown wayward. He is too sure of himself.
The Khan shrugged, as if Horus's fall had been an inevitability. His glorious armor hissed and sighed.
Arrogance is close kin to hubris. He will fail because of it.
Dorn turned his gaze to the War Master's armada. Not since the Principia Imperialis had mustered at the opening of the Great Crusade had such a fleet of void ships gathered over Terra, and never before had so many come as enemies. Terra's iron children returned to their origin with murder in their hearts, to spit hatred onto the cradle of mankind. And yet for the moment, they held back, weathering the storm of explosives and violent energies hurled at them from the ground. Thousands upon thousands of ships crowded every orbit, so many that their lights outcompeted the stars and sun, and turned night and day into a single ceaseless murk of red warglow, strobed with vicious flashes. Void shields deflected the palace's attack, spilling unclean colours across the upper atmosphere in such amounts that they encased the planet in vile aurorae. Bells rang from every palace tower, sirens wailed, tocsins clamoured. Guns rippled out asynchronous drumbeats.
The sky crackled and boomed with the discharge of mighty weaponry. The palace defences had been firing since the moment the ships came within effective range. The fleet was so densely packed, the defenders could not miss. As the brothers watched, a ship came apart, shedding debris meteors. The enemy's response was that single shell.
"Why do you wait?" Dawn said quietly.
The ramparts of the Bab Bastion were empty except for the three brothers. The question he uttered for the sake of speaking, for recently he felt himself falling too often into silence.
"Come to us. Break yourself upon our walls."
"He waits no more," said Sanguinius. His voice, once melodious, was strained. "It begins." He lifted his hand and pointed. The sky sparkled a billion times as every ship in the fleet spoke together. "The Emperor will fall," the pattern of light seemed to say. "We have come to wreak ruin."
"Every war I have ever seen has hidden beauty," said the Khan. "But I have seen few sights quite so entrancing as this." "A fleeting beauty," said Dawn. "And deadly."
The shells hit the upper atmosphere, where they drew flaming lines through the sky.
"All things are fleeting," said the Khan. "Life is short and full of woe. One must wring every moment dry, and drink in the experience it has to offer, good or bad."
The space above the palace was full of the downwards arcs of munitions, and the straight lines of lasbursts stabbing upwards. The air shook with matter hurtling from the void. Booming reverberations echoed from the peaks of the Himalayan massif, resounding around the whole world, girdling it in sound even before the first shot detonated. "How can you see the good in this?" Sanguinius asked the Khan. As he turned to look to the warhawk, the first shells burst over the sky orbital plate, the last of Terra's artificial satellites. It hung low to the horizon, near the inner palace, its wide arrays of grav engines labouring to keep it aloft. The munitions exploded harmlessly, their fury vented into the warp by void shields. The dome of the plate's protective aegis shone with baleful energies.
"Joy is an act of defiance," said the Khan. "With joy, we win, even if we lose. To have lived well is a victory all its own, for we all die. Death is unimportant to the laughing warrior. A poet makes tragedy glorious. That is why."
The shells hit the main shields seconds after hitting sky. The Aegis was wrought with ancient knowledge jealously harbored by the priests of Mars. The voids comprising the Aegis reacted and roofed the earth with fire. Storms of flame shot out complex tangles of discharge lightning. The palace shuddered with the effort of buried machines as halls of generators fought to hold back the bombardment from the spires of the city. Beyond the Aegis's protection, the ground bucked. Towers of nuclear fire roared skywards from every horizon. Tremors shook the world. As the first round of shells hit, the fleet's energy cannons awoke, hurling shafts of burning light and streams of plasma down, so that the void shields danced and the view of the ships was lost. The Emperor's Praetorian looked into the inferno in the sky, his eyes focused somewhere past the fleet, deep into the hidden void, as if he could see beyond the bounds of the solar system and the material universe, and out into the warp, where the fleets of Rebute Gilliman made all haste to the throne world. His gauntlets gripped the lip of the parapet tightly.
"We will not fall," he said with utmost certainty. "We will stand."
Altai Wastes, 13th of Secundus. Thousands of kilometres away, in a land where cold wind cut over bare peaks, other eyes watched the skies. From Altai, the palace was aglow, reflected from the heavens. The curve of Terra hid the palace and the mountains it usurped, but the Emperor's home dominated the globe. One was always certain where it was, no matter how far distant, for in an empire of a million systems, Terra was but a small place. Horus's fleet swam above the city shine, like sparks over distant forest fires. To the watchers on the mountainside, the first shell fell obviously down the sky in a bright tear-track streak. In the long slit lens of high-powered magnoculars, It shone even brighter. Miss Madra lowered the magnoculars from her mask lenses. The lenses and magnoculars worked together to snatch at the light and drag the image so close to her that she felt she could feel the shell's re-entry heat. Bringing the magnoculars down ended the illusion, and she shivered with the cold, though she wore a voluminous cloak over her body glove. Puffs of air, exhausted of oxygen, blew away from her breathing ports in misty curls.
"Is that the signal?"
Ashul didn't feel the cold like her. He tolerated the high altitude better, too, and so wore no mask. His left eye was shut gently. The other pressed the scope of his sniper lens, watching the shell as it came apart under the anti-munitions beams.
"It is as good as any," she said. "We have to be quick. Altai is a long way from southern Himalaya."
The mountain over the valley had a perfectly squared chunk removed from it. At the bottom of this square the sun could never touch was a mining town built around a monorail halt, currently crammed to capacity with people rounded up for the final conscription.
"There will be no more trains after this," said Ashul.
The glaring light cast by the town's tall lumen pylons picked out every individual in the crowd as clearly as rocks in the desert under noonday sun. He swept his sight over them, idly calculating beam diffraction and the difficulties of distance kills.
"You can get us in there?" he asked.
"Do you think I can't?" said Miss Madra.
Over the palace, the bombardment began in earnest. The sky flashed and the earth shook. Ashul shrugged.
"Our luck has to run out sooner or later."
Privately, he felt their luck was exhausted when they'd been sent back to Terra. Not so long ago, he made the mistake of telling Ms. Madra this.
"Our orders keep coming, but the assets dwindle. Now the end."
He waved to the rising false dawn of the bombardment.
"This is the last run for us. We'll get caught, or we'll die in the crossfire."
"Do you care?"
Ms. Madra said. Another cynical shrug.
"I still believe in the Legion, if that's what you're asking."
"It wasn't."
Ms. Madra divested herself of her kit, all of it, cloak, pouches, weapons, everything she carried. She did so methodically. Only when she stripped off her body glove did she begin to hurry. In the glare leaking from the town, her naked body was cast into a relief as pronounced as the Altai Mountains. Peaks of muscle, deep valleys between. Goosebumps formed all over her. "Everyone has weaknesses," thought Ashul. Being cold was one of hers. She was his.
"Do you care about dying?" she said.
He wished she hadn't put it so boldly.
"I do care. I thought I wouldn't,"
admitted Ashul.
"Death in the abstract is a friendlier fellow than death in the flesh, and he's breathing down my neck right now."
She kept her mask on, because anyone who could get a mask like that in the Altai wore one. They were relatively common, despite their expense. From a backpack, she pulled out padded utility clothes worn by the workers and a heavy waist-length jacket. She shuddered noticeably as she clothed herself again. The body glove was a far more efficient form of insulation than the workers' uniform.
"You've become afraid," she said.
"I'm no coward," said Ashul. "We're all going to die, one way or another. I'm still with you. You asked, I said. I don't want to die, but I will if I have to. I'd prefer it if it made a difference."
"We'll make a difference."
"What are our orders, even?"
"Free rein," she said. "Havoc. We'll find something."
"Will we?"
he asked flatly. Ms. Madra gave him a look he had come to know only too well. Her face was invisible under the mask, of course, but the look was there on her face right now. He could tell from the tilt of her head. He could tell from the tone of her voice.
"So do your job, Ashul."
He got up and dusted his knees off. His rad counter gave out 5 slow clicks. The mountains were rife with residual radiation from one of Terra's forgotten wars. He'd read somewhere that the region used to be quite beautiful, a land of rivers, forests, and steppes. He couldn't believe this freezing desert could be any other way than what it was today. He couldn't even imagine it. That was always his problem, he thought. No imagination. That was why he never believed the Emperor. I will, he said. He dumped his rifle with some regret. It was a good gun. His other possessions, stub pistol, knife, rations and such, were common enough to pass as the authentic kit of a dirt miner. They wrapped their belongings in plastic before placing them in a cleft in the stone and heaping rocks on top of them. They would not be coming back, and nobody would find the cache. But old habits died hard.
Alpha to Omega, he said.
Alpha to Omega, she responded.
They snuck down the mountain. The muster point was simmering with tension. The few officials present struggled to keep order. Everyone was scared. Nobody on Terra had slept well for months. Hellish nightmares tormented all the world. The crowd, heaving with irritation and fear, absorbed Ashul and Ms. Madra without ever noticing they were there.